This half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They do a great, great job of making sure, A, you're fully insured, the purpose of insurance. B, and the purpose of customer service, is to make sure that you're also saving money wherever you can. So they'll check and see if they can get insurance over state lines. They'll maybe bundles, whatever, but they'll try and save you money and also make sure you're fully insured. That's what customer service is all about. The great people at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The book is entitled Men in White, and Chris Raymond is the author of it. Chris, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it as we get a chance to talk about your brilliant work.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that.
So let's start with this. What did it take to organize? Because this is written in a completely different style. What did it take to organize the quotes in the order you needed them to tell the story?
Right. It was kind of like working with a puzzle. You know, I would do conduct interviews with the players and sports writers, coaches that I talked to. I think I talked to about 60 people for the book. And then have the transcripts, you know, typed up, and I would literally go through and kind of just excise the gems, right? The quotes that I thought were most compelling. And then I found, you know, in working with it, that they sort of started to kind of connect themselves. They fit almost like puzzle pieces because certain themes emerged in the reporting. And a lot of the players kind of returned to the similar moments or points that they were trying to make. So it was a matter of kind of stitching that together, and I found that it was a lot of fun to do. But the reason that I really kind of chose to kind of go with the oral history was just because, you know, I had covered the team when I was there at Penn State in the 1980s, so I knew some of the people that continued to cover the team in the years after that, but the players had no idea who I was. So I felt like I needed to kind of go to them and, you know, considering how much they'd been burned by, I think, the national media in 2011 when the story first broke, the Jerry Sandusky scandal, it was easier for me to go to them and say, like, hey, you know, I'm trying to tell this story, and it's really going to come out in your own words.
Did it take more work with a few of the guys than others because of the trust?
You know, I was really surprised. I had much more luck than I thought. You know, there were some players that really never quite warmed up to it and didn't want to, you know, didn't speak to me in the end. But I kind of started with, like, some of the walk-ons and some of the role players. And I think those interviews went well, and I think those guys kind of talked to some of the other players. And then I got lucky. I was able to get to Trace McSorley and Christian Hackenberg fairly early in the process. And I think by the time those interviews were done, others were kind of willing to speak to me.
There is a narrative about all of this, as we both know. What did you learn through all of this that maybe you did not know before?
You know, for me, I knew there was a good story in that 2012 season, and I knew there was a great story in that 2016 season. It was a matter of, can you connect the dots, right, and lead people through those kind of lean years. And I wasn't sure whether there was going to be enough of a story there, and what I found was that there was. I mean, those guys were committed all the way through, and it was kind of like a roller coaster ride. So you did get certain breakthrough games, the 4-overtime win against Michigan, and then you would kind of plummet to, you know, the loss to Temple in 2015. But there were things that they were sort of trying to do. I think the thing that really came through for me was, and I guess you kind of expect this from a Penn State player, but that whole idea about, you know, Paterno's idea about success with honor, you know, high character guys, really that's what they kept leaning on in those lean times, was that, you know, these were guys that were coming here not just to win football games, but because they wanted to kind of be well-rounded individuals, and because they felt that whole idea about, like, winning with honor, about winning on a team where you're surrounded by high character guys matters. And so it became a little bit more about the mission. So that was really nice to see that idea reinforced, I think. I wasn't sure whether I was going to get that going in, but I definitely had that. It was very clear in the interviews that I conducted with the players how thoughtful they were, and how much that whole idea about kind of playing with those high character guys mattered to them.
Well, as somebody who covered the team before in the 80s, and got to know the players in that era, Did you find a lot of similarities between the players of that era and the players of this era that you talked to? What were any differences maybe you encountered?
I think that it really was, you know, they were all, I mean, I remember seeing that transition when I was there from, like, my freshman year and those guys that came in as freshmen to, you know, the ones that graduated with me in 1987, and just how sharp and thoughtful they were. And I got that same thing from the players that I spoke to from today. I think one of the things that I found was really interesting in talking to Lydell Sargent, who, you know, had played years before but had come back to talk to the players when it looked like everything was going to fall apart in 2012. And one of the things that he drove home to me, it's kind of obvious, but I haven't thought about it this way, but because Joe Paterno was there for 50 years, you had Letterman for 50 years who all went through the same exact experience. And that's really unusual for a college football program to have that. And so those guys all bonded because they had all been through the same thing. And, you know, when it impacted their lives, they went back and, you know, talked to their own children. I think that's why you saw guys like Mowdy and Zordich kind of step forward to kind of lead this rebirth, because those guys knew very well what Penn State represented and the impact it had on your later life. And so they were willing to kind of step forward and say, hey, there's something important here. We need to rescue this, right? We're not going to let one man tear this program down.
In fact, it's interesting because today James Franklin was talking about Malik Golden, and Malik Golden has started a restaurant in Connecticut. And he was like, the core values at the time, because Malik Golden is one of those guys who was brought in by Joe Paterno, played for Bill O'Brien, and then played for James Franklin, right? So he encompassed all of it, and it's interesting how all three ended up having an impact on him in his life in their own way, with Penn State being the common denominator.
That's right. And I really think that's what those guys kind of dialed into. You know, I think the university, the administration, the Board of Trustees had a very difficult time, you know, defending the university when the scandal first broke. But what these guys tapped into was that idea about success with honor, right? They had lived it, you know, day in and day out. And so that's what they kind of turned to when they were trying to figure out, like, what guides us through this. And that's really is what they kind of leaned on in the lean times. It's what they celebrated when they won. And I think that's what kind of brought the program back in what is a remarkable span of time, right? Nobody expected them to be back in the Big Ten championship 5 years after the sanctions were handed down. And yet they managed to kind of pull that off. And it was from that. You know, I think you saw Bill O'Brien, you know, the thing that he held up to these guys is, like, you're not going to be able to play in a bowl game, but you're going to play in front of 100,000 fans every Saturday, number one. But number two, you're going to get a world-class education here. I mean, that's right out of Joe Paterno's playbook. And I think you see the same thing with James Franklin today. He's talking about, you know, molding these guys not into just great football players, but into, you know, smart, well-rounded men, right?
Mark Emmert, who still can't find the $100 million from his UConn experience, wanted this place gutted because he wanted to show the world, you know, his power and what it meant, and that Penn State would be playing in front of 25, 30,000. When you talk to everybody, what did the fan support mean to them, that it was there on an every game basis?
Yeah, I think that was huge. You know, I think those players, when you turn the corner from 2011, you have Bill O'Brien come in. They have a really great winter workout. And I think they've pulled together, and I think they weathered the storm. And then those sanctions get handed down. And you know, worse than the sanctions was, you know, the decision to absolve them of all ties to the university, which meant that you had recruiters come rushing in, trying to tear the team apart, right? You're looking across the table from you and saying, like, is there going to be an offensive line for me? Is there going to be a quarterback there for me? You know, those guys that even wanted to stay weren't sure whether the program was still going to be there. And the fact that the fans, you know, rallied, there was a rally days after those sanctions came out at a practice at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and thousands of people showed up for that. And that really struck the players hard. There was a pep rally the day before that first game in 2012. And then you just had fans that kind of came out in mass for the whiteouts and the games going forward. And I think it was very clear to those players that, you know, maybe they weren't getting the support from the NCAA and from others, but Penn State fans were undeterred in their support for it. And I think a lot of that was just because those guys were stand up. You know, I look at it. My son was young, you know, in his early teens when all of this was happening, and, you know, in writing the book, I kind of reflected, and I was like, you couldn't ask for better role models, right, than guys like Michael Mowdy and Michael Zordich and Matt McGloin and Christian Hackenberg and Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, you know? It really is, there's a sense of a certain kismet there that those are the guys that ended up on the team, but, you know, not only were they great on the football field, like I said, but, you know, guys like Saquon would kind of sit there and sign autographs for, you know, as many fans as wanted to kind of stay and collect them at the end of games. You know, they were all so thoughtful, so well-spoken. You know, they really worked hard in the locker room. You know, it's really, these days it's really kind of difficult when you have a child to kind of say, like, hey, look up to sports heroes, right? But those guys were certainly there on that team. To this day, you can kind of look up to what they achieved.
If there was anybody in that time that was symbolic that still to this day creates a bit ire among Penn State fans, it's Silas Red. And Silas Red ended up, and Lane Kiffin was the coach at the time, went to USC. I know I've talked to enough guys, and I feel strongly this way. I wish he'd come back to Penn State because I know why. Like, he was so attached to Joe, he was devastated by the fact that Joe wasn't there. And what were the comments that you received about Silas Red? Because I know in talking to the players I've talked with, they'd love to bring him back. And look, and I'd stand side by side with him myself.
Yeah. I think, you know, when I was in the midst of reporting the book, that's when that documentary Saving the Roar came out. Yep. And that certainly was one of the bigger storylines there. I think one of the most remarkable moments in that documentary is when they went back and talked to Silas Red about the experience and how much it gutted him. You know, he had a guy there in tears. He was literally in tears at the end of that interview. You saw the impact that it had on him. And I think he spoke then, not long after that, on Adam Brenneman's podcast. And again, just a remarkable interview. And so when I saw those two things, I knew that that had to be a moment in the book where you kind of heard from him and what he went through. So I've heard players on those podcasts. I've heard others kind of talk about wanting Silas Red to come back. But I really do think it's like somebody needs to step forward and make that happen, because I think Silas Red would really appreciate that, would love that, to be reunited with that group. And I feel like you get the same sentiment on the Penn State side. You know, a lot of those guys kind of look at what he went through and look back to what he meant to that 2011 team. Like, nobody faults him for going to USC.
Right.
He is that guy that looked and said, is there going to be an offensive line? You know, and here's a team that's ready to compete for a national title. And he was, like, right on the cusp of a going into the NFL draft, right, being a high draft pick. Mm-hmm. So nobody faults him for that.
No, and that's the thing. I'd stand side by side with him any time, tell everybody, hey, look, I mean, hey, I know the reasons why he went, and the reasons you talked about, and again, he had a real attachment to Joe. Right? And so there's a lot going on there. I've always felt, Chris, that there, with the fan base, there was an us versus the world mentality from the moment this happened until the Ohio State game in 2016, where I've said that when that game ended, the moment Grant Haley crossed the goal line, that to me was the first true release of joy, and not just us against the world, that there was a release of joy that night that got the program emotionally into a different level. What was your thought on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think that I think what people on the outside didn't realize in 2011 was that you had the national media sort of descending on the campus, and pushing, you know, the story forward, driving it forward, like really pushing for heads to roll. I know for me personally and a lot of my alumni friends, like they wanted answers to who knew what right. and when, you know, on campus. And it just became clear that that was never going to happen. You were never going to get those answers because of how fast they pushed that story forward. And so I think that's where that us versus them mentality comes from. It was like an invading army, really, you know. That's where that us versus them mentality comes from. But that 2016 team, when you look at it, that, you know, was one of the most thrilling teams to watch because they had all those sort of come from behind victories. And you know, again, you're looking at, you're rooting for guys like Trace McSorley and Grant Haley and Saquon Barkley. It's hard not to root for those guys. I think you couldn't look for better ambassadors for the sport of college football. And so I think when they finally broke through, it was clear that, you know, the team was back. This was a team that could compete on the national stage. And they did it in a way that was so joyous, right? Such a thrilling win, topped only maybe by the one in the Big Ten Championship where they come from like 21 points down, right? So I think that it was hard, you know, it was easy then for the rest of the world to kind of come in and celebrate it, right? And to kind of forget what had happened 5 years later, or at least, you know, forgive what happened, you know, 5 years earlier.
Chris, I'll use an old-time word here to ask the question, how big did the Rolodex get for this?
It's funny. I have a lot of friends. I actually was able to reach out to a lot of the players on LinkedIn because, you know, what people don't realize is their football careers are over for a lot of them. They're off doing other things. So I can say that my LinkedIn followers got significantly larger as a result of it. But again, it was, you know, I think I was doing these interviews in the midst of the pandemic and, you know, working full time at Consumer Reports where I work during the day. So to come, you know, close the laptop at the end of the day and interview one of these players, it ended up being like crazy inspiring for me. And that's why I was able to kind of do it night after night. So they're all good guys, like I said, and I'm just really honored that they trusted me to tell their story, and that I was able to kind of pull it off. And as you know, you see when you read the book, it's really, I didn't have to add any drama to it, you know? I didn't have to go for any salacious details here. There was a great dramatic story that was waiting there to be told, and I'm fortunate those guys shared it with me.
Here it is 12 years later, book's now out. How gratified have you been by the reaction to the book?
Yeah, it's been tremendous, I think, so far. I mean, I've had a few players that kind of reached out to me and said, like, you got it. Thank you. I really appreciate it. But there's also been, you know, I've done signings in Harrisburg and Williamsport and Scranton and State College, and I had fans that came forward, too. And, you know, that was also one of the goals was just to try and explain what it means to be a Penn State fan, what it meant to kind of go through that turmoil to people who maybe didn't understand it all that well. And so, for me, it's just been tremendously gratifying to have, you know, those fans, people who've read it, kind of come forward and said, thank you for telling the story.
What has been your family's reaction to it?
I think they were happy when I got to talk to other people about it. They heard about it for 3 years as I reported. So they're happy that it's done and that I'm talking to you instead of them.
Fair enough. Chris, it's outstanding. I couldn't put it down. I went wire to wire with it, and I appreciate the tremendous effort that you put in to tell the story exactly right.
Well, thank you, Steve. That means an awful lot coming from you as somebody who's watched the program up close.
Chris, thank you. Appreciate it.
For so many years.
Hey, really, good luck with this. It's entitled Men in White. Quickly, Chris, where can people now pick it up? How can they get it either online or in a bookstore?
Yeah, it's in bookstores from coast to coast. So you can go to either brick-and-mortar stores or it's available online as well. Anywhere where you buy books, you're likely to find it.
Well, congratulations on this great work, and we appreciate the time you gave us tonight.
Thank you. Take care.
Chris Raymond. He wrote the book Men in White. It is an outstanding piece of work, well worth your time. It is a terrific read. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.